It's just too cold out there. So just sit inside, sip some coffee, and listen to the news, according to me. Well, here we are. It is Monday. Mishmash Monday, I think we call it. I'm not sure I've come up with any other name for Mondays. I just need one day to just vent. So I'm doing that. There's no days of the week that begin with V. Can't call it ventilation. Wednesday. Use the German pronunciation. Wednesday. That might work. Or is it Russian? I don't know however that works out. Good morning, folks. It is December 15th, Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, it's late because I got in late last night. I decided to come home. Yesterday was actually a fairly restful day for me, not for my dog, obviously. He's going to be barking probably throughout this entire show because he will not settle down. So I may have to cover him with a pillow for about 5 minutes, let him take a little nap. I don't do that. I'll have to put him upstairs. No, that's not going to happen. Come here. Where's your toy? Get your toy. We'll do this. We'll deal with this later. We'll have a discussion later about this. He understands every word I say. See how well that worked? No, come here. It's late in the day. He's ready to go do something. I apologize. Let me just put it this way. And just like that, with the magic of pause and resume, I am back. And no barking dog, at least not that you can hear from here. I have a sound studio booth type thing that is, I need to get moved into the house and set up because that way I could just put him outside. I just close the door on that thing and you wouldn't be able to hear. He could be barking his head off. You would never hear him. Anyway, aside from all that, it is 2025. I don't know if I've said this or not. It's 2025. I happen to mention the year that we're in. Because that has some kind of context. Now, I have in my cup this morning, I have some creamy chai, Big Train chai with coconut creamer. And then I have in my backup cup, I still have some sweet tea, which is actually pretty good. I've noticed if I keep it sealed really well while I'm gone and keep it cold, keep it at a constant temperature, it tends to last quite a while. It lasts long enough that I can. It stays good for me even when I'm gone for 4 or 5 days. Not much more though. I'm going to have to do something different here in a little bit. I have probably make some more tea. Basically, is what I'm saying. I have to leave early Thursday morning for something. Got a few things to do here while I'm home. But there will be a trip. I'm sorry, there will be a show today, tomorrow morning, normal time, Wednesday morning, possibly. Again, there's always that possibility of a live show. You never know when that's going to happen. And then most likely Wednesday morning. And then on, what is it, Thursday? Thursday, I've got a long day on Thursday. I just don't see any way I'm going to be able to get a show in unless I do a show Wednesday night and then push it on, have it posted on Thursday morning. Friday morning, good chance there might be a show, but it could probably end up being either super early in the morning or a little bit in the afternoon on Friday. And then, of course, over the weekend, nothing. Silence from me. And the following week, I don't know. We'll see how things go. In the meantime, let me know what you think about what I think. I've got a few things I'm going to talk about this morning and just kind of vent off some things that happened over the weekend as well as some other things that are going on. And then I'm going to tell you about we're going to talk a little bit about what happened in Australia as well as what happened in the United States, Brown University. Still don't know too much about that one. We kind of know what's going on with the Australian thing. So we'll figure all this out. I have a few other things to talk about. But in the meantime, You can call the hotline number, 812-379-8778. You can call or text that number, leave a message, and you can share your opinions or share just anything. Whatever you want to ask a question, you can ask, the sky's the limit there. You can do whatever you want on that thing. You can post stuff, you can text stuff. And if you don't have a phone, I don't know how you're listening to me, but if you don't have a phone, and you have some kind of electronic device, you can go to, that you can search the worldwide intertubes. You can go to google.com/voice and then type that number in, 812-379-8778. And you can leave a message there. You can, maybe I'll play your message, or maybe I'll talk about your message, or maybe I'll just ignore your message. You never know what's going to happen. You never know. It's a mystery what happens there. In the meantime, I want to talk about some things that have happened. This thing, was it in Queensland? I can't remember if it's in Queensland. I've been to Australia, and I would have thought this would have probably happened in Perth, but I don't know if that's. I just know that a lot of the crime that happens is in Perth. Oddly enough, for those of you who are my friends in Australia listening, we do have people listening in Australia, by the way. I haven't done this for a while. Let's go to the geographic statistician stuff. Did I talk about this last week? I don't think I did I? Maybe I did. We do have some people who listen in Australia. There's quite a good number of them there. I think they made it up onto the – they're within the top three nations listening, United States, Britain, and then Australia. Of course, there's Japan and Great Britain. Is that Great Britain? I guess Great Britain. No, I'm sorry. That's what is BR? BR is that's Brazil. Sorry, Brazil is actually the number two. That's amazing. Brazil is number two. We got some Mexico, of course, Colombia, Ecuador, Brazil, obviously, Paraguay, Argentina, Uruguay. What's this down here? I thought that's the Falklands. I guess Falklands. Australia, South Africa, Kenya, Morocco, Iraq, Uzbekistan, of course, Russia. There's not very many from Russia that listen, but Germany. What else we got here? UK, of course. I just already mentioned that. Iceland. UK. Ireland. Japan. Japan has a fairly high. It's fairly high up there. What else we got here? India, Pakistan. Did I mention Uzbekistan? I think I did. All right then. So we have quite a number there. Now the cities, Sterling, Virginia, which is I think the area where the capital is. My understanding is that is the highest rated. There is a large number of people that listen from. That's the number one rated city, Sterling, Virginia. I get the most listens. Now, that's not necessarily Sterling itself. They may have the servers may be there. Sometimes I show up as a Chicago guy. My location, I don't know why. It just has to do with wherever the servers are kind of pinging back. But it bounces around the area sometimes. Emerson, New Jersey, another one. New York, of course. Las Vegas, South Bend, of course, that's the area I'm in. So all my friends around this area that are listening. And then... it's probably mostly my wife. She's the only friend I have. not really. There's some other friends I got. Right? That's pretty. Yeah. She's not really a friend. She's a wife. She's more than a friend. Friend kind of demeans the whole relationship. Massachusetts, Cambridge, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Evansville, Indiana, Tokyo. There's several actually from the. Japan, there are several cities from Japan, London, England, of course, Henderson, Kentucky, Wilmington, Delaware, Farmingdale, New Jersey, Sydney, New South Wales, and then Lakewood, New Jersey, Speedway, Indiana, Springfield, Massachusetts, again, Tokyo, Arthur, Illinois, someone just going down. I think I did cover this on the weekend, or last week. I may have covered that. Of course, the dogs are barking because... I believe there's probably a delivery happening right now. We'll see how that goes. Speaking of deliveries, I forgot to check my. I think I get paid today. I think I totally forgot to look at that. And I'm going to look at that right now and just make sure that all happened. And there it is. That's fine with me. That looks better. That looks much better than it did last week. That's good. Okay. They managed to do it. So that's good. Anyway, I have this thing that happened in Australia. Quite disgusting. There was a Jewish, it was a Hanukkah party, or as you might pronounce it, Hanukkah. By the way, happy Hanukkah. Today is, actually started last night at sundown. The Hanukkah, first day of Hanukkah started last night. That's about all I know about that. So anyway, happy Hanukkah. Or Hanukkah, or you can say Chanukkah, I guess. I don't know. That's not really correct. Kind of the way some people spell it. The party start was over the weekend, apparently, and a couple of gunmen. Now, when you know there's more than one, it's not just a lone crazy guy. This is a serial ideological attack that happened. Random attack on a random individual. This is what gets me about the Islamic attacks that happen. And this is, and it was an Islamic attack, I mean, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. By the way, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. And everything I say on here that if I accuse anyone of anything, it's all or say anything about anybody, it's all allegedly. This is for entertainment purposes only. It's all just a big joke. So there you go. That probably doesn't protect me from anything because I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. Anyway, but I know my chai is good. So this attack that happened obviously was planned by a couple individuals. They decided to go out and just start shooting people celebrating a Jewish holiday. And I believe two are dead, I believe. Possibly, or was it more than that, I guess. So maybe that was the other thing that happened at Brown University, I'm thinking. Maybe there's 11 or 12 people that actually passed away. This is the response. I think that the I can't remember who this lady is. I think she's the governor over the area where this happened. And this was her response to this whole thing. Of course, while they're showing live footage of this thing over a helicopter, they're interviewing her. And she makes this big, long comment. And she makes one little statement in here that I want to talk about today. And it's it just kind of struck me because I've had this argument with people for many, many years. Back when I was 19, 20 years old, I had arguments with people in the church about this kind of thing. And I'm sorry, I totally disagree with this idea. But we'll see if you can spot the little ideological thing that she says in here that something she believes. Just give you a little clue to how she says it. And we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about that a little bit because I totally disagree. Totally. Totally. Anyway, here we go. This is her, the lady. I don't know what she is. She's some kind of government official person in Australia. Let's hear what she says.
So the escalation of this narrative of who we're against and how much we want to divide each other and how much we want to attack each other, that is really at the core of a lot of the problems that we have in the country at the moment. And I firmly believe that people are good and that given the opportunity, they will look out for each other. And I just want to say that as much as possible, we should try and detoxify the way that we think of people who aren't like us, because our diversity in this country is our strength. And I firmly am on the side of working together and celebrating our difference, because, you know, I was a community organizer a long, long time ago. And strongest campaigns that we ever worked on were about bringing people of different faiths and different worldviews and different backgrounds together to find what we had in common. And at times like this, it makes me think of, you know, what happened with Jo Cox and her speech and that mantra that she had about more in common. We have more in common than that divides us. And
it's all gobbledygook, folks. It's all mishmash, gobbledygook, pie in the sky, feel good about your fuzzy, warm fuzzy, frolicking and just platitudes. I don't understand. First of all, did you catch the thing that I was pointing out? People are basically good. This is an idea that people are good. People are basically good. This is an argument I've had with people for years, that people are basically good. No, they are not basically good. I totally disagree with that. Go to any country that has no laws, that doesn't enforce laws, that lets lawlessness run, and let's just basically, people just, it's anarchy, basically, and see how that works out. People are basically good. It is chaos. It is nothing but tribal war everywhere. People are basically selfish, is what they are. And we have laws that protect us from each other. Or in theory, they restrain and hopefully protect us from each other. Because they don't have to worry about the... Well, because you have to deal with the consequences of your selfishness, if you want to call it that. At its core, most sin is based at its root in a selfish desire, selfish motive. Almost all of it is. From day one, from Adam and Eve, there was a selfishness there, a selfish motive. And it's at the core of everything that man does. Men and women, people, do, that is at the root of the problem. Even the most unselfish people I know still have some, and sometimes people are generous because they're, for selfish reasons, makes them feel good. That's good. I mean, that's great. I mean, I'm glad you're generous. I'm glad it makes you feel good. It's good. That's good. But still, it's kind of a selfish motive in some ways. Understand? It's very different than having a. Well, it's just I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole too far. But that's the problem with this whole thing. This idea that people are basically good. It means that they will choose good all the time. They will always choose to do the right thing. That is not the case. And usually, you don't find that out until you start squeezing people in such circumstances where the pressure is on, get into a life or death situation or a situation where it's fight or flight kind of thing. Or it's you put them in that squeeze, the real person typically comes out in the midst of all that, and it usually ain't pretty. What can happen to those people? This idea that people are just going to selfishly. Or selflessly give. I've seen people on the street who have been some of the most generous people in the world. They have nothing. And I've seen others that are the most selfish people in the world. And typically it is their selfishness that gets them there. There was recently, I wish I could find this. I played it recently. I just happened to go through it. There was a guy, Patrick Bet David, had this guy on his show. Maybe I can find this. I don't know. Actually, I could just use that same frame I had just a minute ago. Maybe I can find this while we're talking here. But this is the kind of thing that happens as we go through this stuff. Now, I missed that one. What happened there? I'm pretty sure it was a short. I listened to it yesterday. Hopefully, I can find it here. By the way, this guy says something that's... I want to play this because it's... I think it's a profound thing. And again, this is Mishmash Monday. I can play whatever I want. It just goes on and on and on. There's a couple things here I want to play that I watched over the weekend. I can't find this Patrick Bet David thing. Where did it go? I cannot find it. I thought it was right here somewhere. No, I don't see it. He offers this guy a job. Pretty much tells him, you know, he pretty much explains to him, you know, here's a job for you. You can have this job. And the guy, he starts backing away, but he starts questioning whether or not the job is, no, that's not it. It's ridiculous the way this guy responds. Maybe I can find it here. Patrick. Bet. David. Job offer. Now, this is the guy. I think this is the one. Makes a big offer to a guy. This is the one. This is the one. I want to play this for you because this is very telling.
How about I interview and I give you a job? Would you move to Fort Lauderdale?
Ooh, how's Florida? Sure, why not?
Would you move to Fort Lauderdale?
Sure, why not?
How about you and I document this? After this, you come, I do an interview with you, and I give you a job. And let's see what you do 90 days later.
Okay, I'll look up your company and all that kind of stuff, and I'll see it.
But you see what just happened
regardless,
right there? But watch what you just did.
Sure.
You just said you applied to 477 mm-hmm. companies who's not gotten back to you.
Yeah.
A business owner mm-hmm. who's hiring aggressively just made an offer to you.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're willing to move. Then you said, I'll look at it. You became selective.
I didn't
you
say I look at it if you'd let me finish my sentence.
Go ahead. I want
to
hear it.
I would like to look into your company to see exactly what you guys do.
You would like to?
Because I don't know what you guys do.
Okay.
So as far as I'm concerned, I may be wasting my time going. If you guys are a finance company, if you guys are a bank or something like that, I don't have the certifications. I don't have the degrees. So even interviewing me would be a moot point.
I gave you a job, period, to work 80 hours a week? Would you take it? And I paid you a reasonable wage.
Are we talking a livable wage or a reasonable wage?
What do
and
you make
whose
right
version
now?
Of reasonable are we
what
talking
you
about?
Right
your
now?
Version of reasonable or my version of
but
reasonable?
But you see, so now for me, what I'm noticing from you is...
Is I need specifics?
No, not necessarily. No, most of the people I hired need specifics.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is I'm trying to hire them. In this instance, you're trying to get a job and you're being selective. It's going
to
work against you.
I mean,
you.
I'm not trying to get a job. Originally, I was
my
trying to ask you where the
table.
Moral fell.
My
offer's
off the table
okay,
because you're going to be difficult to work with.
Okay, sure. But my question was, where is my moral failing? Like, where is it that you are saying that I am not working hard enough and I am not doing enough?
I just
enough?
Experienced it right now because the way you just handled this situation
got it.
Here
so I
was,
should accept anything
no,
that somebody
not,
gives me
not
at first
all.
Blush
no.
if it is a guaranteed thing.
No, not necessarily.
I agreed, I agreed to do your interview. I agreed to be interviewed by you, and you agreed to consider me for hiring.
Yeah.
So therefore, I am taking that opportunity. I've chosen to. But because I am asking you for specifics, your immediate reaction is that, oh, well, you're trying to be picky.
Not,
I'm asking
specifics. You could have simply
I said I need
said,
to look up your company. That's all I said.
All you could have said is I'm willing to have the interview.
And
right?
I did.
You would have had the interview.
And I did.
No, you said it depends.
I said,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Sure.
Let me look.
Yeah,
me
sure. I would look into your company. That's all I said.
I appreciate you. Thank you, James. How about I interview?
He had a job right there. It was because his biggest complaint was he can't get hired. This guy, I didn't play the part before this because this is just a short. This the whole video is much longer. This whole thing is all about this guy. He says because he was raised in poverty. Everybody in his location is all poverty in the Appalachian area. He can't get out of it because he's stuck in this thing where he can't get out of it. And all he does is come up with excuses. Dude, you got to break out of your shell. There's a podcast I listen to every morning. They post this stuff every day. Let's see, what is the, where'd it go? Okay, got that. The name of this thing is, where'd it go? Ugh, I can't hold my word. There we go. The name of this guy is Nick Invests. His show this morning was called The 9-to-5 Trap. The 9-to-5 Trap's keeping you underpaid. Most people never escape. This idea that, you know, you get into a job, you don't change that job. If you change your job about every 4 to 7 years, that's what I would say. You look to a different job every 4 to 7 years. You will probably increase your potential. If you stay at the same job, you will only get basically the raises that you will get are probably going to be only. Now, you can change your position within a company. That's kind of the same thing, and it's if a company's doing those kinds of things and promoting you, that's a little different ball game. However, if you're stuck in a particular job for 4 to 6 years, 4 to 7 years, he says 4 to 5, I would call it 6 to 7. You probably are only getting the only raises you're getting are cost of living raises. It may not even be that much. It may not be enough to cover that. You might go from $40,000 to $50,000 in a 10-year period, and you're not keeping up with inflation. There was a, you know, that's just the way it is. People, unless you push them on it, unless you show your value and show, you know, you have some way to push back on them and say, hey, I deserve more now. I should be getting, you know, more than this. Now, if you know what the company's making and you know how much you're making and it's a small company and you're going out and you're doing work and you're doing whatever it is that you do, or you're 9 to 5 at your desk and you know what your particular position is bringing in to the company, then you're making, 80% of that. It's kind of hard to ask for much more than that, unless there's something else in the company they can have you do. And this happens typically, and of course people just don't ask. People won't ask. But that means you just need to move on. I mean, you need to, your experience only goes so far. Your experience is, experience can become a repetitive trap after a while. You're not learning anything new. You're very good at what you do because you've done the same thing 1,000 times. That's great, but you've never expanded anything that you're capable of doing. That's where stepping out and going to a different position. My wife is going through a transition in her job position right now, and it's one of those things where, you need to find – take some time to just kind of, not let that past job define who you are, or think that you have to stay in that particular lane. There's you need to maybe open up that idea. Maybe God's going to do something different with all that and move you on to learn new things. It's just the way it is, because your experience has taken you this far, and now where is it going to take you from there? That God always builds on what your past done, whether it's maybe something totally different. Here's something where this guy says this. I think it's kind of interesting. It's a old guy. I don't know who this guy is. I find it very. This the name of this channel is called Be Still and Know. This guy looks like he's almost as old as I am. Looks like he's in his 90s. I don't know. He could be 70. I've seen some people recently that I know are close to my age, and I don't look that old. I don't look that old. I look old, but I don't look that old. I know I'm an old man, but these folks are—they're looking mighty old. So anyway, this guy's probably in his 90s. Looks like he's very fit, very mentally fit. Let's listen to what he has to say.
Every time I feel like God ain't there, I always remember that the teacher was quiet during the test.
Teacher was quiet during the test.
Nobody warns you about the silence, the moments where you pray and nothing changes, the days where you give everything you've got and life still hits back harder. The nights where you're begging for a sign and all you get is stillness. It means you're in a season of proving, not a season of comfort. It means God is watching how you respond when you can't hear him, how you hold on when nothing makes sense, how you show up when no one's clapping, how you keep walking when the path is dark. Tests aren't meant to feel easy. They're meant to reveal who you're becoming. Mm-hmm. And the crazy part, every time you thought you were alone, you made it anyway. Every challenge you thought would break you, didn't. Every valley you cried through, you walked out stronger. So if you're in one of those silent seasons right now, breathe. You're not forgotten. You're being strengthened. If you needed this reminder today, comment. Go.
Of course, I think this was AI generated, maybe, but because at the end he talks about commenting, and first of all, old folks don't say that kind of stuff. But of course, they play all this music behind it. This is a good word, though. I believe it's a really good word. The biggest thing is just to remember that you're not forgotten. You're not forgotten. The teacher is always quiet during the test. Not always, by the way. I was taking a test recently. I had to go through my current training stuff, and the entire time I was taking this test, the teacher was talking to somebody else in the class. That it was somebody, just some guy that was a federal overseer type person. They yacked and yacked and yacked the entire time. And I did say something at one point. Because it was slow. I've never been seriously diagnosed, but pretty sure I have ADHD. I have attention and issues, and it's very difficult for me when somebody else is talking in the room to focus on something when there's anything that's going on. I'm the kid who could sit in the front of the class to try to listen to everything the teacher was saying, and I would there could be a kid combing his hair in the back row, and I knew about it. without even looking at it. I just know, I know what's going on back there. And it's distracting me. I don't know why. I can hear the comb going through the hair. But the only place, I did find this one time I went to a class. It was a real estate class. And I got there. I was kind of one of the last ones through the door. I happened to be kind of last in line getting for the first day registering for this thing. And it was a broker's class. And went through this whole thing. And I happened to find they had this one table that was set up on the side of the room. And it was facing the class. It wasn't facing forward. It was facing sideways. I was basically sitting there observing the class. I got straight A's in that class. I didn't miss a question. I absorbed the whole thing. Very strange. I think the distraction of not knowing what was behind, there was nothing behind me. Being able to observe the class and how they learned and what they did, that actually was even a little bit of an elevated situation so I could actually see everybody in the classroom. It was bizarre. And I learned. And it wasn't like the teacher was talking at me or to me. She was talking to the class. I was observing the whole thing. I stayed focused through the whole thing. I kind of blew my theories out of the. It's the first time I ever. I didn't really notice it until about halfway through. This class was every week for I think 6 weeks or something like that. Or maybe it was twice a week. I can't remember. But I kept choosing that seat, and I happened to notice that. This is actually working really well for me. I'm actually doing really well in this class. And I couldn't figure out why I was absorbing so much and being unable to focus so much. I can only attribute it to that. It was the only thing. There wasn't anything special about the teacher. The subject matter wasn't at all. I wasn't exactly into real estate. I can do it. My dad was. I was doing it to help him out, and he was good at it. He was awesome at it. And real estate sales actually has more to do with being a people person and having relationships and networking with people, with the community. And I don't like people. I didn't have he just had a knack for it. I just did not have the gumption to do it. It wasn't impossible for me to do, but I just didn't have the motivation to do it. And I helped him out with it. I mean, I could understand it and I could get through it, but it was just, maybe after I would have gotten, a few times under my belt, maybe made a couple $1,000 here and there. There's potential to make a lot of money in real estate, and it is a good lucrative job. But it just wasn't something I was. I've found other things I can do that I can wallow around in stuff. However, I think it's important that we realize that it's sometimes through the quietness that we learn more sometimes than. And it's important, I think, that we remember that it wasn't that God didn't forgive us. You've all seen that, forget us. You've all heard the thing about the guy who was walking on the beach and there was two sets of footprints there. And then there was one. And then again, there was two. Again, through this really tough time, there was only one set of footprints. And then he came back. God left him during that time. Why did you leave me during that time? I didn't leave you. I was carrying you. Those are my footprints. Hard to see that sometimes. And sometimes the test goes on longer than we had planned. I'm usually the last one to finish a test, by the way. I don't know why. I'm usually the last one in there. They give us 3 hours to take a test. It takes me about an hour. There's people who walk up there after 5 minutes. I got done. Here's a go. I got straight A's. Didn't miss a thing. What is going on here? I've read the first three questions. And I can't even. I have to go back to. I can't. What? Well, what'd you just do here? Anyway, here's another one. This is kind of a mishmash day, but talk about this a little bit. There's some other things I want to cover about I'm talking kind of fast this morning. I think this chai's a little strong. anyway, I have, this is the thing that, now this, the beginning of this, I don't like the way that people do this. They use Joe Rogan. I'm going to try to get through the first part of this. Well, play this next clip. They use Joe Rogan clip at the bottom of this thing. They'll make it look like Joe Rogan is responding to this. And I don't understand how they get away with this. Now, this is actually JRE podcast clips. I don't know if it's actually a Joe Rogan experience thing or not. They actually use the same icon thing. This may be actually something that Joe Rogan put out. I don't know. But the first part of this has him on there. And I don't, a lot of times people just use the clip and the frame to kind of to give their thing credibility. And it's not what we're going to do here.
Bananas.
I am the direct descendant of the North American slave trade. Both my parents are black. All four of my grandparents are black. All eight of my great-grandparents, all 16 of my great-greats. On my mother's side, my ancestors were enslaved in Alabama. On my father's side, we were enslaved in Texas. I am not oppressed. I'm not oppressed, and I'm not a victim. I'm neither oppressed nor a victim. I travel all across this country of ours. And I check into hotels, and I fly commercially, and I walk into retail establishments, and I order food in restaurants. I go wherever I want, whenever I want. I am treated with kindness, dignity, and respect, literally from coast to coast. I have three children. They are not oppressed either, although they are victims. I've taught my children they are victims of three things: their own ignorance, their own laziness, and their own poor decision making. That is.
So that, there you go. This is a guy who's got it together, understands it. Now, granted, this guy's not standing there at the podium with his pants down around his knees with a hood on, talking like he's coming from a hip-hop album. Like a gangsta. He's not accusing anybody of anything that he's, you know, for his own bad decisions. This is a guy who takes accountability for himself and his life. And he has taught his kids well, is what it sounds like. If they have, telling them something is one thing, having them learn it is a whole other thing. They have to learn that through just going through life sometimes. But he's got it. He's got a good grasp on what's going on here. He's not a victim. He's not oppressed. Now you have this other guy. I want to play this because this is kind of interesting. Let's see if I can find the actual spot where this guy is. I still listen to Mark Dice occasionally. I don't really like the direction that Mark Dice takes on his show anymore. I think he's kind of gotten a little bit lopsided with some of the things he says, where he goes with some of this stuff. Now this is. He points out some things that are, you know, straightforward, basically true. But here's a guy who finds out that he does a search on his background, and he finds out who his great-great-great-grandpa is or whatever it is. And he realizes that he's a direct descendant of, he's descendant of slaves as well. It's a whole different perspective this guy has. And let's see how he treats it. Where he goes to with this thing, because it's very interesting how his perspective is very different than the last guy we heard from. Here he goes. I thought he was going to play this here, but he's going on and on and on here. Here we go. This is where it starts. This guy starts talking about he does this search and he does this whole thing about his background. Come on, now, stop talking so I can play this thing. Where's that? There we go. All right. He just continues on with this whole thing. Wow, it's like 2 minutes of having this guy's picture up there. He's just yakking away. Again, this is where I don't like where Mark.
Family that purchased the first black wood of my bloodline mm-hmm. off the slave ships in Charleston.
Yep. Of course.
This is Charleston is where some of the slave ships came in. Charleston, South Carolina, is that where it was? Where that happened.
That's what we came off of.
If I wanted to today, I could find the white wood descendants in southern Georgia and pull up on their f***ing house. One day I will.
Yeah.
They ain't got no money, though. I Zillowed their crib. They broke.
I think that's funny. He's going to pull up on their house. The descendants of the people who owned his family. But he thinks it's funny because they're broke. He's not gonna, what if they weren't? He thinks it's funny that they're broke. He's not, obviously. He's very well dressed, got some very expensive shoes, got a car in the background there. I don't know what this show is. It's something about Play a Star or whatever it is. It's this thing. What's the problem here? This is vindictiveness. This is not reparations. He's going to go beat him up for it. Just blows me away that this is the kind of reaction response. And then you have this other fellow, very different response, understanding that you move on and you're responsible for yourself and that people are responsible for their own actions, not the actions of their forefathers or anybody else that was in their family line. It just blows me away that people are like that. Now, getting back to this whole thing with Patrick Bet-David, this guy that he's interviewing, guy he's talking to, you have people who will get stuck in this situation, and this that and the 9-to-5 trap. This idea that you kind of get stuck in this familiarity thing. You get in a position where there's loyalty. You think that there's no way out of this. many times I've been one. I don't know. I'm wired differently, I guess, and most entrepreneurs are. I get a business idea, and it's dangerous. Now I'm looking into AI right now, and I know AI. And I've talked about AI last week. I talked about it on, I think it was on Friday. Artificial intelligence, which is really synthetic intelligence, it's actually just a tool. It's kind of a thing, but I can see it. And I'm not going to get into the whole thing again, but it's how much more can a person do? They claim that it's like having a staff of 50 people in some ways. If you really know how to manage AI and make it do things for you. However, you are completely immersing yourself. By the way, I mean that's all well and good, but you're completely immersing yourself into the network, into the machine that will know everything about you. You know, the more you give it your email, you give it all your stuff, you give it all this information about yourself, so that it can manage your life for you. That's a little spooky to me. But people are doing it, and I get it. It makes you more productive. It's kind of this integration between having a very. But here's the problem: AI can hallucinate. It can actually make stuff up. It'll fill in the blanks. I mean, it's very obvious when you look at some of the pictures that it can generate. Sometimes it shows stuff where people's hands are half, they're like their cell phone is part of their hand or whatever. Weird stuff happens. You know, if you look into the crowd, look into the details, it doesn't always do real well with that stuff. And it's, but picturally it looks fine on if you're just glancing at it and kind of getting the general view. So that's kind of where this stuff is going. But however, if you can use AI to your benefit and as a tool, where it is you're the master and it's the slave, the trick is there that sometimes it kind of it will trick you into giving it more information than you really should be giving it. That's where you have to really be careful in what you do, in my opinion, and some of the rights that you're giving yourself away and. All those things, but anyway, we'll see where that goes. A couple other things I want to talk about. This whole thing about being wired differently. I've met a lot of people who had really good business ideas, and some of them they have this business idea. They hold on to it for several years. Of course, by the time you get around to it, you don't do it, and then somebody else does it. And like, oh yeah, I had that idea. I thought that would be a really, really good place to do that, or a really good business to have in this community. Somebody else does it, and then you feel like, oh, I bet somebody else will do it. Now I can't do it. They never did it. And the reason they never did it is because they had all these excuses, all these reasons. Well, I have to have this. I have to have that. I have to have $50,000 for this machine. I have to have that. I have to have this. Can't do it. I guess I've never been that way. I've always found ways to go get around that. I'll buy a used machine for $10,000 instead of spending $50,000 for a brand new one. I'll start with what I've got, try to make it happen. If I got a passion for it, I'm going to try to make it happen. Now, that was when I was younger. As I've gotten older, I'm a little bit less motivated to do some of those things. I don't have the elbow grease mentality that I had back then. But there are young people who do. And that's where I can step in and say, hey, you got this thing that you want to do. You got a passion for it. Maybe I can help you by helping invest in what you need. I'll be kind of a silent partner here. Let's see if it works. It's something I would want to do. So you got the ambition and the energy level to try it. Just need a little bit of funding to make it happen. If you're willing to, kind of start. If they really do have, but now if it's one of these people, if it's somebody who says, well, I've got to have $100,000 or $100 million for this trailer to make it work. And no, we're not going there. I want to see you start something small. You're going from nothing, and you want somebody to give you $1 million. And your resume is you've worked in a, you've operated a screw gun most of your life. I don't understand. A friend of mine, he had this, I'm going to talk about it. I don't think he listens to this show. If he does, I haven't talked to the guy for years. He had this idea where he wanted to buy a restaurant, and he moved on to something else. And he has no food experience. He cooks for himself. He has no restaurant experience. Looking for $1 million loan to bring back this restaurant that had shut down. And that's a very noble cause, very good. Just show me a business plan. Any investor that looks at that is going to say, I want to see how you're going to do this. Who are your key people? Who are the people who are going to manage this place? Because you know nothing about this. You've never even worked at McDonald's. Then he wanted to buy this trailer that he wanted to pull out into a particular area, almost like a taco truck type thing. He wanted a truck, is what he wanted. And then I kind of tried to talk to him about a trailer. Maybe just move a trailer out there, and you can. It's not quite as expensive. No, he wanted to have a truck that he could drive out there every day and sell stuff at this little park area. And it was going to cost, he said it was going to take about almost $1 million. Of course, everything, all of his ideas were big, which is good. It's not, I don't have a problem with somebody dreaming big. But again, why not get something small? Buy a used truck. You're only going to drive this thing about 5 miles a day. In fact, the park would probably let him keep it there all week. He'd probably just have to drive it out, once a week. And buy something, get a generator, put it on the back, whatever, You could do this for $50,000. Why are he's looking for, I think it was $750,000 to have a new truck. Well, maybe a new truck's in your future if you can make this one work. Just build it up and expand it and then scale it. My first business, because that was back in grade school. A little business. The first big business I was in that really generated a lot of funds. Actually, I had a lot of cash flow. I didn't really make any money at it, but I had a lot of cash flow. Was in the aviation world. I had a little flight school, and my first airplane, I purchased it. I didn't even purchase the airplane for the purpose of starting a flight school. I purchased it because I needed to build flight time, and it seemed like the best way to do that was to buy this little old runout 150. Cessna 150 that had an STC. It's a certificate thing that allowed me to burn auto gas in it, which means I could run the thing for really cheap. Now, the engine was already run out. It had like 3,300, whatever it had on it. It had the recommended TBO, time before overhaul. It was already there. The airframe itself had about 8,000 hours on it. It was an old airplane. Even then, this was back in the early 90s. I think it was 89. It was 1990, I think, 91. When I bought this thing, and I was just going to build it to just, I just bought it to log time. I could put 100 hours on it. I can do some training in it, and then I can turn around and resell it for the same amount of money. So it wasn't like I was going to be out anything. In fact, prices of airplanes even that vintage at that time were going up. In fact, if I had that same airplane today, I could have parked it in a hangar or parked it at my house. And now, 30 years later, 35 years later, that airplane would be worth about four times what I paid for it. Probably. Of course, doing upgrades and that kind of thing on it would have made it even worth more. But the it wasn't a bad investment. In other words, it wasn't like buying a car. It didn't lose its value. You know, 30% of it didn't just, you know, the day I bought it, didn't lose that. I could turn around and sold it for the same amount of money I bought it, paid for it, when I bought it. Maybe more, because the guy actually gave me a pretty good deal. Now, so I thought, well, I'll run the thing for 100 or 200 hours, which is nothing on the airframe, nothing on the airplane itself, a couple hundred hours. But it means a lot to my logbook. It meant a lot to the insurance company that had, you know, 500 hours instead of 300 hours. It's a magic number sometimes in insurance companies. At least back then it was. So I got it and started doing that. Well, then I realized, hey, I can use this. I can hire an instructor here to give me some instruction so I can try to work on my CFI, my Certified Flight Instructor license. So I did that. So instead of just tooling around in the sky doing nothing, so flying around with an instructor working on my CFI. So I was working on all my, and then they would give me a lesson, and I'd go out and fly a few times and do some of my maneuvers and that kind of thing, just flying from the right seat and then doing that kind of thing. And, you know, just practicing and building time at the same time. So then I decided to go down to a school called Boulevard Aviation, which was in Tennessee. So it doesn't exist anymore. I flew the airplane down there, and I did my CFI training, which was, I had to use their airplane. It was called a 141 school. They had a program. So I went through it. It took me about 5 days. Got certified as a certified flight instructor, and then I flew my plane back. Then I started my flight school. Then I started doing, and I realized, hey, my airplane, I can do, because I'm an owner-operator, I got insurance for it. Started doing instruction in the plane that I had. That was the beginning of my flight school. I didn't wait around for somebody else to make that happen. I decided to make it happen for myself. I had what I had in my hand is what I used. I didn't have to have a new airplane. I started doing discovery flights and started doing all this stuff. And next thing I know, I get an investor that wants to buy a twin engine airplane. Well, now I've got to get my multi-engine instructor license. So I went out to find a place. I had to go to Van Nuys, California to get certified in a, and I wanted to use the same kind of airplane that I was going to be flying. It was a Seneca 1. That's what this guy was buying. And that's what I was going to use for my flight school. So it was kind of a lease back operation. So the owner of the airplane used it for his business, and then I used it for doing multi-engine flight instruction. Wasn't the prettiest airplane, but it wasn't expensive. We paid $36,000 for this thing. This was back in 1993, I suppose. End of 92. So over that winter. So then got the airplane and started doing instruction in it right away. And it was going very well. Then the next thing you know, I get a couple of smaller airplanes. I end up with 8 airplanes, several employees, going through a lot of money. Costing a lot of money as well. Started towing banners. I got a 182. So we had a 182. It was all this stuff we had. It was just one thing after another. And went through a lot of money. Didn't really make much, but had a good time. And built a lot of flight time up. I ended up with over 4,000 hours in just a couple years. Anyway, the point is, I didn't see the why not. I didn't see the why I can't do it. I saw how can I make it happen kind of thing. That's just kind of the way I'm wired, I guess. And my wife, I drive my wife nuts because I have a lot of stuff around the house here that I know it has potential. I know there's, she would call it trash. I would, of course, then something breaks and we need to do something. And I've got that in my pile over here. Let me go get that. Make something out of that. It's it's the kind of thing where I don't, and maybe it's just a poor man mentality too. That's sometimes that type of hoarding can become, is the product, I guess, or of being it's a poverty mentality kind of thing, or I guess I would call it a depression mentality. During the depression, nobody threw anything away. Everybody kept everything because things were so sparse and scarce. And during the war, Second World War, especially. People would hold on to everything. I kind of have a little bit of that, I guess. Probably a little psychological thing going on there. Can't throw anything away. But I can't, I also live near a landfill, and I can't stand the fact that it keeps getting, I don't want to see that stuff just go into the ground. I just don't like that. Anyway, the There you go. So I think I've played everything. Have I played everything? I think, yeah, I played that guy, played that guy. All right, I think I've played everything I need to play. This is something else. I'm not going to play that one. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about what's happened now in Australia. Again, another attack happened at Brown University. I don't understand that one at all. I have not heard much about on the details. All I can tell you is, my heart goes out to them, and we pray for the survivors. We pray for all the people who are involved and the victims and were involved and the families. By the way, I want to pray for the next person who is the attacker. Let's pray for them right now that they would come to the light of the truth and not be that would just stop that right dead in their tracks right now. Not just accept the fact there's going to be another attacker. We need to start praying against the spirit of death. Now, there's this lady talked about in this thing where she was being interviewed about how people are basically good. We need to work through our differences, and diversity is our strength. Folks, there are some cultures that just are not compatible. There has to be a change in the heart of some of these individuals, and it's a deep-seated ideology that is at the root of the problem. Look, I hate to say this. I really do, because I know that some of the people who listen to my program are possibly Muslims. The Islamic faith needs to have come to Jesus moment. You know, there are many, many Muslims right now. This is happening in waves in different areas of the Middle East and other places, where they're having visions of Yeshua, and he's revealing things to them about Islam and the way they've been lied to. They've been lied to by their leaders. It's just one thing after another. And I unfortunately, it's this entrapment, this enslavement of the pressure that they put on people it amazes me. Now, having said that, there was recently an interview, and I think that I can't remember who it was between. It was Anna Kasparian was the person who was being... Oh, it was Bill Maher. Bill Maher and Anna Kasparian, they were having this discussion. It was very interesting how Bill really... I think he could have set it up a little bit better. I think where he was doing this, it was just kind of a toe-to-toe kind of thing. It was just on his... It was very... I guess serendipitous. It was just on the fly kind of doing things. And... I think she was wearing, I didn't see the audio. I only heard I didn't see the video. I only saw the audio of this thing. He's sitting there asking her a question. I'll try to pull this up for tomorrow. Tomorrow's Technical Tuesday. We're going to talk about more technology stuff tomorrow. However, he brings up this thing, and it's about they're having this discussion, and she's saying something about, she's trying to defend how this country has oppressed and meddled in things in the Middle East and caused all kinds of problems over there. And most of the problems they're having over there are because of our meddling. And I think that's kind of where the general gist of it was. But she made some comments, and then he says, "Which Middle East country would you choose to live in right now? Where would you go right now?" And she, of course, she was kind of put back on her heels with that. She wasn't, I don't know. She wasn't sure. And then he says, and I'm paraphrasing, and I'm probably getting it all wrong here. But the comment he makes, the question he asks her that really makes her squirm and pivot completely. Apparently, she was wearing a very very modern dress of some kind. I think her one shoulder was revealed or something, and she was wearing this kind of a fairly short dress apparently. And he says, what Islamic country could you wear that dress in? Could you go there in that dress kind of thing? That was kind of what he's asking. What Islamic country could you wear that dress in? And she pivots immediately and starts to blame the U.S. for the problems of the Middle East. It was really remarkable to see it. because of the way she knew that, that there was just there was no answer to that. She knew I don't even think you'd go. I think Qatar even has. I mean, there's Dubai. I think there's places that that generally accept tourism in their country, and you don't have to wear a hijab, but you do have to wear. Women do have to be dressed properly. They have a dress code there. You can be arrested for not properly being for not proper attire. And so it's very interesting that they have those kinds of ideas and these mentalities, just like these people who are, you know, LGBTQ for Palestine kind of thing. You don't see LGBTQ being a problem in Palestine, in the Palestinian culture, because they kill them, typically. And it just blows my mind that the kind of mentality that some of these people have, and of course the freedom that we have in this society is they're using that freedom to bring in oppression. It just blows my mind. But there it is. That's what it is. Well, folks, it's been an hour long show here, and you know I'm going to get your money's worth because you know I know how much you're paying for this. I know how much I'm paying for it. There's no sponsor. You just have to listen to my drivel once in a while and my mishmash all over the place stuff. But hopefully it's entertaining for you. Again, I do what I can. These are all my opinions. You can share your opinion about my opinion at 812-379-8778. Give me a call. Give me a text. Whatever you want to do there. Or not. Whatever you do. It's free country. Do whatever you want. In the meantime, I just want to appreciate all of you who listen and tune in to this kind of show. Tomorrow will be more about technology. We've got a few things about technology I want to talk about. I think we might talk about the price of silver a little bit. There's some things weird things going on there because it has to do a lot with technology, why the price of silver is going up like crazy right now. In the meantime, folks, God bless. Happy Hanukkah. And have a great rest of your week, this week of Hanukkah, right before we go into the holidays. God bless, folks. Take care. I will see you.